Hey y'all, are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts, doctor, attorney, and author Mayor Eisenstein and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific Time. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain Time, and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. But you can listen to the archives at naturalnewsradio.com and blogtalkradio.com anytime that's convenient for you. We welcome your calls during the live show. That number is area code 646-478-0772. That's area code 646-478-0772. You can call in just to listen to the show on the phone, or you can call in and press 1 if you have a comment or question you'd like to contribute. And you can email us during the week. Those email addresses are Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com, Mayer at homefirst.com, and attorney at vaccinerights.com, attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is September 1st, Labor Day. I'm vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips and my wonderful co-host, Dr. Mayer Eisenstein. Mayer, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm wonderful, Alan. Absolutely wonderful, you know, and had an incredible, wonderful couple of days. We got together with lots of the family, and actually had a lot of rain today, especially in the morning, so I was able to just kind of take it easy for a day. Wonderful. And how are you, Alan?
I'm doing great. And, Mayor, we have a special guest coming on a little bit later on the show, Wayne Rohde, who is launching a brand new book that's going to be immensely helpful in continuing to raise awareness on the vaccine issue. So looking forward to having Wayne with us in just a little while. And we've already got another caller on the line here, but there's tons of things going on. Mayor, anything in particular you want to dive in with
evening? Yes, I do have something I'd like your opinion on, because it's going to affect hundreds and hundreds of families in the Chicagoland area. The Chicago Public School System has put out a form, physical examination and or immunization waiver form. It's the first time I've seen this form, you know, and it very specifically is for someone who refuses vaccines. And I want to read just a few sentences. State law mandates physical examination if you are a parent, a legal guardian, have religious objection, or your child's medical doctor has a medical reason, please fill out this form. Please know that if there is an outbreak of a disease for which your child is not immunized, your child may be excluded from school for an indefinite period of time till acceptable proof of immunity is received by the school. Interesting, that's not the law here in Illinois, but I don't care about that right now. And that says, I, name of parents, name of child, and then object to the following immunizations. And I kind of been struggling the last couple of days how to help the family fill that out. Should they cross the whole section out and just put, we object to all vaccines? I mean, the law does not say object to any vaccine. What's happened in Illinois, the schools, and many of them, have interpreted the law wrong. When it says you have to give your specific reasons, they have interpreted that to be specific reason for each vaccine. But no, the specific is your specific reasons why you're not vaccinating.
Actually, Mayor, I have talked with several parents and families from Illinois, and there actually is a Department of Education document that says procedurally you have to name each vaccine that you're opposed to. And I've seen people, had at least one client who submitted something that was rejected solely for that reason, and when he went back and added the name of each vaccine he was refusing, they accepted it. And I suppose there's a separate question. You know, it's interesting because the laws are different in every state, in not just with respect to the wording, but with respect to where in what you might think of collectively as the black letter law or code the procedures contain. What I mean by this is that some states will spell out a procedure in the statutes. Other state statutes will delegate that authority to the health department. And sometimes I've even seen where a statute spells out one procedure and the health department spells out a separate procedure and will create a form, and you would actually technically have a choice between either using the health department form or following the statutory procedure. So there can be one procedure either in the statutes or the regulations, or potentially even two procedures, one in the statutes and another one in the regulations. And this, of course, causes immense confusion. Then you have a third piece that you are describing here, where somebody takes it upon themselves, and I've seen this in other states as well. Kentucky is one that comes to mind, where there's a local school district that has decided you have to have a doctor's signature on a religious exemption form. Blatantly unconstitutional, in my opinion, but unless you're going to hire an attorney and go in there and fight it, or try to get some change with the local school board, if that's where it's coming from, or the legislative level, or health department. You know, you have to go to whoever it is that's the source of the problem, which could be a local school district, or it could be the health department if it's a problem with their form, or it could be the legislature if there's a problem with the statute, and try to address it, you know, at whatever level the problem's occurring. And there is a formal type of law or area of law or type of analysis, maybe is the more precise way to say this, that we have to employ when we want to when we ask the question, what is the proper interpretation of a statute or regulation or whatever, it's not just whatever we happen to decide we think it
right.
should mean. And every state has what they call statutory construction rules, which are rules that tell you how to interpret statutes, and they generally will apply also to regulations. So if we were going to analyze this formally, we would start with the exemption law, apply the state statutory construction rules, and we would be looking to see whether or not they would tell us, or what those rules tell us about how to interpret the statute and regulations and so forth. And something, Mayor, I've commented on before, but I think it just really bears repeating that you have brought this, that you've brought this issue up, is that we're seeing authorities at all levels, from local districts to health departments to state legislatures, and of course we all hear about some of the more infamous examples at the congressional level, where laws are being passed that clearly walk over constitutional lines. And this just, the usurpation of power here, the eroding away of constitutional rights, is disturbing in this arena and other arenas as well, where, because the way it works, a law is not officially unconstitutional unless a court says so. So what that really means is local authorities, state authorities, Congress, any of these people, health departments, agencies, when they create regulations, any of these bodies that create law, statutes or regulations, or maybe ordinances on a local level, essentially what that means is they can do anything they want to, whether it's constitutional or not. And then if we don't like it and we think it is unconstitutional, then it's up to us to take some sort of action to raise that issue formally in front of whatever adjudicatory authority would be appropriate to any given situation. But it's really disturbing to me because at the legislative level, for example, all state representatives take an oath to uphold the state and federal constitution, but when it comes to what bills they vote on, that oath goes out the window, because if they don't want the oath to matter, then it doesn't matter, because they can, the practical reality is they can pass anything they get the votes for. And when you got the health department, you're not even dealing with something where the public votes on it. They are delegated authority by the legislature to basically make any rules they want to. But sometimes they overstep their boundaries because they're not allowed to go any farther than the statutes go. And so there's some, you know, boundary crossing going at a lot of different levels here. And I don't know that that Illinois Department of Education letter carries any legal weight, but it's there, and it does say, name all the vaccines, and people have been rejected because they didn't name all the vaccines. And it seems really silly to me, because they can always add another vaccine you didn't name in last year's letter, for example. Or, I mean, is anybody really checking to see if they named all the vaccines and going to try to force somebody to get one they didn't name?
Yeah, let's look at another way here. I think this is a major victory because they acknowledge there's a religious waiver. Though the form actually puts all the vaccines. All you have to do is check them. I mean, and so that was my feeling that, you know, why fight it? They want a uniform form that just goes into the chart. That's all they care about, the child's record. And so in a certain sense, this makes it easier because all they have to do is put their name, check them all off, sign it, and that's it. They're accepting it right like that. So in a sense, they're acknowledging, just the acknowledgement that this is something that requires a form, right or wrong, a constitutional or unconstitutional. This form is easier to fill out than any letter that a parent creates. I mean, that's the incredible thing about it. I mean, just I find this exciting in a sense because I think the schools are, as I said earlier, this is the first year, Alan, that I see 40, 50, 60, 70, maybe even 100 parents tell me the school nurse has said, oh, we have 8 or 10 other families who don't vaccinate based on religious grounds. Never saw this before. Usually it was one, maybe two at the most in any one school. But it's now become so common that the school nurses want an easy way to deal with this.
Well, if they're putting it all together in a form where you do just, you know, check it off, that's terrific. Because, and sometimes now, it varies state to state. First of all, not every state even has a form. And I strongly recommend that if your state doesn't create a form, don't use a form. You know, follow the procedure in your state. You pull a form off the internet, it may or may not meet your state's requirements. But when there is a form, sometimes that's the required way for the to get the exemption. But other times it's an option. And so, again, it just depends on what your state's particular statutes and regulations say. So really the starting place is to read the law, read the statutes, read the regulations. And most of the time, Mayor, when I look at state laws, they're pretty straightforward in the wording. It's pretty easy to understand what it means. Mostly they're not ambiguous where you're not really sure if it means this or that. Usually it's pretty straightforward. But you do have to look at both the statutes and health department regulations in most states to have the whole picture.
Sounds very, very good. You know, I mean, then I have one more little piece of information to bring, and that is I had a new family in this week, and a wonderful family. They moved from New York to Chicago, and she's a model, a print model, and she said to me something very interesting. She has 30 or 40 friends who are models in New York. None of them vaccinate their children. Isn't that interesting?
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it was like, you know, wow. She said they keep it quiet, they don't make it public, but I can tell you that none of my, and she said we have, there's about 30 or 40 of us, you know, in New York, and she's developing a whole new group of model friends here in Chicago, you know, but isn't that, you know, I mean, this is incredible. These are high-profile people within their profession, you know, who've decided not to vaccinate.
I think it's fascinating, and I'm sorry to say that I think it's wise that they be low-key about it, but what is interesting to me about being low-key, you know, it's the occasional person who speaks out, who gets persecuted in the mainstream press, and you know, I hate to see that happen, of course, but in a sense, maybe it's a good idea because it's almost a distraction from all the ones who are being quiet. They can just go hammer away at that when, meanwhile, we're quietly building, you know, the what will ultimately be a majority of people who are either against vaccines or think that you should have the right to decide, you know, who have questions in one level or another. And so let them target. I mean, sorry for the ones who get targeted. I don't mean to show any insensitivity to that. But from a strategic level, you know, let them pick out a few people to hammer at over and over again while the rest of us quietly get organized and grow in numbers, you know, because then all of a sudden, you know, when there are enough of them, and if they all come out at once, you can't just all of a sudden, you know, single one or two out to make as examples. So sorry that they have to go undercover. I agree that they do, despite that. But hopefully there'll be a point when we can all kind of come out at once. And it's just going to be too much. You know, you can take down one or two, but you can't take down 20 or 50 or 100 or a few thousand. So it'll be interesting to see how this evolves over time, Mayor.
I have one more thing to mention to you, and I want to make sure that our guest isn't on the line with us. As long as you know that, I don't want to take away from our guest.
I think it's not our guest yet, so let's go ahead and get to that call after
sounds
your next point.
Sounds great to me, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, sounds good.
And if it is our guest, then we'll just dive on in. As soon as I get the button pushed here, you're on the air, area code 310. Welcome.
Hello, gentlemen. It's Brad from Los Angeles. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Brad, how are you? Happy Labor Day to you and your family.
You as well. I appreciate that. I wanted to give you the story, the update, because you know, you're talking about the schools, and everyone who is against is obviously going through the particulars. I originally thought we were going to skate through. I'm in LAUSD in Los Angeles, and our son is in pre-K. And so we had to switch schools because he got in behind. There was a waiting list. We thought we were told there wasn't. He would be right in, but he wasn't. So now we had to switch schools. And I'm told now that I have to meet with the school nurse. And the school nurse is there every Friday at this particular school. And that's going to happen this coming Friday, and I'll see what that entails. I haven't filled out any forms, so I don't know what question this particular person is going to ask. Obviously we're in, you know, California, Los Angeles, so I was wondering if there's some pitfalls I should avoid, Alan. What do you think?
Well, the problem with asking me my opinion is that I always have one. I'll clarify, of course, first that I'm delighted to have, you know, the question and call, and we always welcome calls. And I have to give sort of the blanket qualifier here. We don't give legal advice on the air, but I will answer the question in sort of general terms.
Yeah.
But my understanding in California, and I think this is true in all the West Coast states, where in the last 3 or 4 years, each one of them has changed their laws to put additional requirements, hoops you have to jump through to get the exemption. And I think what they're trying to do, aside from the obvious, make it discourage people because now they have to go through more steps to get there, and maybe some will just give up and get the vaccines. Who knows what the thinking is, but they want to make sure you understand, you know, what a horrible thing you're doing. There have been all these, you know, outbreaks in different parts of California. And I think probably the temptation for most people in that situation, including myself, absolutely, so this is not in any way a criticism of anybody, I'm right there with you, would be to use it as an opportunity to educate the nurse about the problems with vaccines. And I would say probably 99% of the time that's not a good idea, because they, even if they could hear you, and 99% of the time they won't be able to, their job requires them not to hear you anyway, you know. And so the kind of general recommendation I have, if what the conversation is about, here's why vaccines are so important and necessary, and you know, don't you want to change your mind whether they say that outright or not? If that's really what it's about, I think the best thing you can do is to just sort of listen quietly, you know, thank them for their time, because most of these people really do have our best interests at heart, and they just believe information that you and I think is erroneous. But, you know, thank you so much for, you know, your kind concern and attention. I really, you know, appreciate that you're here, you know, helping the students in, you know, with all the things that you do, but I'm just choosing, you know, to exercise the exemption. I mean, that's, of course,
okay. On a philosophical basis, is that my ground? Is it to philosophical, or do I go with the religious one? Which was stronger for me?
I would say absolutely nothing. You know, would you feel any, you know, just thank them for the information. Here's my waiver.
Okay. Well, and I just want to also tell you that
when people do have a clear position of religious objection, I think, you know, it's possible to minimally add something like, and in whatever wording is true for you, of course. But, you know, thank you so much for your concern. I really appreciate it. I know you really want, you know, the best for everyone here, but I just have to leave this one up to God. You know, if you're going to say anything at all other than thank you, really appreciate it, but this is my decision, then I would add something like that, again, if it's true for you or in whatever language, you know, would be true for you. But the main point is to not engage, even if they attempt to engage you, you know, if they were to ask you something like, you know, can't you see how important this is or something like that, resist the temptation to get into a discussion about vaccines. Now, you know, this is a generalization. Okay. If you had the one in a million situations where somebody genuinely seemed interested and open and willing to hear, because you do have the philosophical exemption there, like in many states where all you have is a religious, that's the last place you want to get into a discussion about any non-religious thing, like whether vaccines are harmful, for example. That's generally not going to be considered supportive of a religious exemption. But if I were, I think the best general rule is to avoid interacting, having a discussion about the merits or problems with vaccines. But if I were ever going to raise a point about vaccines, I would do it with a couple of different questions. I wouldn't assert any information as a fact. I would ask questions like, "Well, do you know how much money the federal government pays out every year because of the children and adults who are killed and injured by vaccines?" And you just by asking the question, you help them to realize that they don't understand part of what's going on here. You know, do you know what percentage of disease decline, in fact, childhood infectious disease decline, preceded the introduction of vaccines back in the 1900s? You know, and again, you make your point by just asking the question that they you
right.
potentially help them to realize that they don't really know, you know, the whole story here. But I tend to think it's best not to even go there really at all, unless you just really felt you had an unusual situation and it seemed like the right thing to do. But usually I think it's simpler just to,
yeah,
you know,
I think it's best to say as little as possible and
yeah,
just try
exactly.
and get out of there. Now, one thing I will say, apparently there's 19 kids in his pre-K class, and there's at least six who had to meet with the nurse because of the same
wow.
issue. So that's 30%. That's coming up to 30%+ of the parents in this particular school, which is in the heart of Hollywood.
Brad,
there's
the reason you're being invited in. They're scared
right.
about the number of exemptions, and they want to see if they can figure out
right.
what's going on. All the more reason to say as little as possible.
right.
Alan,
okay,
so
I'm
obvious, they're all listening to our radio show.
That's right. Well, and I'll say one last thing before I go, gentlemen. The SoundCloud channel for you guys is now past 10,000 plays and over 400 downloads, and it's cranking every day. So, good luck.
Awesome.
Brad,
awesome,
thank you
Brad.
So
thank
much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Take
that's,
care.
Thank you, Brad.
That is largely your achievement, Brad, because you have really taken this on and made it happen, and we really appreciate it.
Oh, total appreciation.
Okay.
Awesome.
Have a nice evening.
Thank you.
You too.
You know, Al, that's really interesting. You know, I mean, is the California law that you have to have a doctor's signature, that they've talked about it, not that they is that in Washington, the state of Washington?
I think both of them. Well, there's a list of people in California that includes a doctor, but also can include a school nurse. So there's a short list, and I don't remember the entire list. It may be 3, 4, 5, 6 different kinds of people, but it'll be some kind of far more likely than not mainstream medical professional that has to get a signature. And I remember people in Washington when their law went into effect, I think, back in 2011, maybe 2012. And some people were having trouble finding a doctor anywhere who would sign it. And when somebody would find a doctor, they'd ask, you know, require some outrageous fee for the visit and sign the form. So it really seemed like, of course, when parents brought that issue up to legislators before the bill was passed, they said, oh, no, nobody's going to do that. And, of course, now they're doing it. It certainly feels, who knows, but it certainly feels like it was something that was set up to enable doctors to get in the way of parents exercising a right. And it really concerns me. You know, I'm complaining about unconstitutional laws, and this is a classic example when you see this in all three of the West Coast states, where parents have a constitutional right to the care, custody, and control of their children is the phrase that the U.S. Supreme Court and other courts have used, and that includes medical decision-making. The only time the state can intervene is when there's some sort of special situation, like an emergency. If a child is being abused or neglected, the state can intervene and protect the child. But whenever the state, by way of the legislature, takes a parental right away from all parents in the state, then it is making a presumption that none of the parents in the state are fit to make that decision. And, of course, that would violate standard due process, constitutional due process principles. You are presumed innocent until proven guilty, that kind of thinking. And the U.S. Supreme Court has applied that kind of thinking with respect to, now, you know, guilty, innocent before proven guilty is in criminal law, but the Supreme Court has applied that general kind of concept in civil law with respect to parental rights, that parents are presumed to act in the best interest of their children unless and until there's some formal showing, which would usually be through some sort of judicial process. Evidence is presented and somebody, you know, make some kind of ruling. So it really troubles me when a state says, well, to exercise this decision, all of you have to go get educated because none of you are smart enough to make this decision until you are educated by a doctor or whomever. And that sort of thing really troubles me. I think it's a violation of every parent's constitutional right to parent their children, which comes from the 14th Amendment Due Process Clause, as interpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court over, in many cases, over the last 100 years or so. And then with respect to those people who have religious objections, where the courts have said very clearly you only have to have meet two requirements to qualify for religious exemption. That is that you have to have beliefs that are religious in nature, which is very, very broad, and that are sincerely held. And when a state tries to add more requirements, like you have to get a doctor's signature, which has nothing to do with religion whatsoever, it's clearly going beyond the constitutional boundaries that have been spelled out in by the federal courts. So when states are doing this, I think they're violating the Constitution, but I guess we would not know technically or with certainty unless we can get these laws in front of a judge, let both sides make their legal arguments, and then let the court rule and make a decision.
That's absolutely awesome. I just one more thing to add before we go to break, and that is the same family who I was corresponding with from Maryland told me that the school had called them and told them that they wanted them to meet with a doctor, and the doctor wanted to do it over the phone, and she said, no, I'm going to meet with the doctor in person. I'm taking a tape recorder there, and I'm going to tell the doctor I'm tape recording what he says. He got real nervous, so I don't know what's going to happen there.
Oh, I love it. It sort of gets into a gray area, you know. Can they record the doctor? What can they do with that recording if they do? But, you know, if doctors are going to play hardball, or to the extent that they do, I love the concept, at least, of let's hold them accountable. Let's say, okay, if you're going to lecture me on this, I'm going to record your lecture, and then let's bring it on this show, Mayor, and then let you and me respond to their assertions about vaccines. But anyway, we've got Wayne Rohde on the phone with us here. We're going to get to him right after the break. And he's got a terrific book coming out, and I can't wait to hear more about this. So stay with us, folks. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour, and Mayor, we've got Wayne Rohde on the phone. I was telling you about him earlier. I'm going to talk just a little bit about Wayne, but I want to ask him then to tell us anything else he'd like us to know about his background, and then he's got one book about to come out, another book in the works, and this it really sounds like fascinating stuff, so I can't wait to hear more about it. Wayne lives outside of Minneapolis with his wife, Robin, and he's got twin boys, but they're not identical twins, and only one of the kids is vaccine injured. A real interesting, of course, always, I'm glad I do Radio Mayor, because every time I talk about this day, something like this, when someone has an injury or difficulty from vaccines, my eyes start watering, and, I've been doing this work in terms of my own investigation for 20 years and my legal work over 10, 11 years now, and it always affects me just as much, if not more, as I hear more and more about this, people who are having difficulties with vaccines, reactions, and it, every time I learn of another, it just deepens my commitment. But anyway, we are really delighted and honored to have Wayne with us this evening. Wayne, how are you doing?
Good evening. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate that.
Our pleasure. Wayne, how do you spell your last name for people who want to look up your book?
It's Rohde, R-O-H-D-E, and it's out there on Barnes & Noble. Amazon's got it. Both places also have it in the electronic format. And then also they can go to my publisher, which is Skyhorse Publishing, and they can get the book there too.
Well, that's terrific. Wayne, is there anything else you want to tell people about you or your background before we dive into the books?
No, that's fine. I have the twin boys, and Austin and Nicholas. Nicholas was vaccine injured at 13 months with the MMR. Austin was not. And what was interesting is that they were born premature and 10 days apart. And but they were hitting their milestones at 12 months. And Nicholas lost his speech at 13 months and then started slowly regressing.
I just can't imagine how difficult a thing that must be to watch and to, see in your family like that. And I'm sure you've spent a number of years now, recovery, as you said in an email, is a slow process, and certainly I've heard versions of that story from many people. Do you feel like you're making progress?
Oh, yeah. But,
great. Well, I'm always glad to hear that.
Yeah. We started, Nicholas was on the, what we call the severe or profound end of the spectrum. That's where he bottomed out, if you will. And we've been able to bring back certain skills, certain things, but we had to address, like Mayor's talked about for years, some of the medical issues. He had tremendous gastrointestinal issues, and we've been able to correct most of those and some other things. So he's probably the healthiest of the four of us in our family. never does get a cold at all, but, that's last 10 to 12 years worth of doing a lot of things, a lot of medical interventions and diet interventions and things like that.
Wayne, one of my professors, the late Dr. Herbert Rantner, used to say that the best way to live a long life is to get something that won't kill you, but you're going to have to be vigilant every day of your life to take care of yourself. Now, this is surely not the way to go, but I love what you're saying. That's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's just he's still nonverbal, and he's going to require, care for the rest of his life, but he now, through a lot of hard work, a lot of financial commitment, We have 40 to 45 hours a week of in-home therapist care for him. And he communicates by other means, such as through his iPad and some sign language now to us. So he's really a joy and a treat, but we're still constantly working at it.
Wow. Wayne, was there anything unique that can single out why your one son was affected and the other son not? Is there anything that you've kind of thought through maybe you could share with us?
Yeah, there was, and this was something we ran past Dr. Krigsman many years ago when he did the initial scoping and pill cam, and that was, what, 7-8 years ago. There was a drug that's used off-label a lot called tributyline for asthmatic pregnant mothers, and FDA only suggests only 2 to 3 days of using it. So my wife, actually, this is crazy, she went into labor on our third wedding anniversary that evening. And Austin was born a few days later. And then 10 days later after that, Nicholas was born. The problem was is that Nicholas was subject to that tributyline through in utero through my wife for 2 weeks. And that might be something to look at. And Krigsman was very curious about that. Now, he tracks that in his database since he met us. It's one of the things that he looks for now. And I couldn't tell you. But by the time we knew we had a vaccine injury, it was too late for the program. We were already statute of limitation out. And we couldn't file, period. Hence my curiosity for the program.
Let me ask you that. So your wife's carrying twins, and the first one was born. How many weeks was your
28 and a half weeks. Austin 20? Was born at 28 and a half weeks. He was 2 pounds 10 ounces, and Nicholas was born 10 days later at 3 pounds 11. And it looked through the sonograms, it looked like Nicholas gained a pound in those 10 days. But he was exposed to that tributyline medication for those additional 10 days that are not recommended. We did not know that until...
Let me ask, was there any tributyline given with your first son, or did they start it after the delivery of the first baby?
He was on his second day.
Second day, okay.
Okay, and FDA, according to what we've read, was 3 days max. Now...
Very interesting.
You know, I haven't really explored much of that since then, but that's what we were told, and then that's when, you know, Krigsman started looking at that, and they got us thinking a little bit more of it. But Nicholas was basically exposed for, you know, 12 days.
So you went from all of this then, obviously, to looking into the system, and I remember seeing one case that was very troubling and involved a medical doctor who ultimately developed full-blown I'm drawing a blank here, but that the condition that she had didn't actually set in permanently until after the statute of limitations ran. And the case was all about when did the statute of limitations start running, because with injuries generally in just terms of the legal system generally, you don't. That statute of limitations doesn't run until you were at a point where you knew or should have known that you had an injury. And if you know, you don't even qualify. Now, you correct me if I have this wrong, because I do exemptions and waivers. I don't do injury cases, but I don't. I believe
right.
You don't even qualify to file until you've had a condition that persists for at least 6 months.
That's,
and this woman had.
That's correct.
She had MS that came and went for 3 years, and it was after the 3 years that. She finally had a condition that persisted for 6 months, and they said, well, too bad, you're past the statute of limitations. Any other kind of injury law, the statute of limitations wouldn't even start to run until she qualified to file the suit.
That's
so it's just really
you're correct.
Bizarre, the bizarre the way they've set this all up. But so tell us how you got into then looking into the program and what you found.
Several years ago, I was introduced to Bob Krakow and Lou Conti and Mary Holland and a few other people, and this was when we were living back in Oklahoma. And, you know, from conversations and prepping for presentations at Autism One and a few other places. And then I heard about, you know, the efforts to identify compensated cases of children with autism. And I was following very closely, wasn't doing any of the research then, but that when I saw that being published, I was then encouraged, because I was floating the idea of talking about the vaccine court. Actually, it's the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, but everybody calls it the vaccine court, about doing maybe a paper on it or some research project, but from the family's perspective, meaning what was it like when you filed the petition? What was your interaction with the program, with your attorney, you know, doctors and all this stuff? So I started really cranking it up once the unanswered questions paper was published. And from there, I started interviewing families, and I basically have interviewed over 285 families. And these interviews would go on for an hour to 2 hours. In some cases, several of these were several interviews lasting 10 to 15, 20 hours when it was all said and done.
Wow.
And so you spend a lot of time, and it was difficult to try to find some of these families, because a lot of them just didn't want to talk. They just want to hide. It was a very grueling experience. They don't want to relive it. It's kind of, when you put it in perspective, why it's very difficult to get people to testify as victims in abuse cases or rape cases, because they just don't want to relive it. Same thing here. These folks have gone through a very dramatic or traumatic experience dealing with it themselves, or a family member or a child, whether it's an injury or, you know, in worst case scenarios, death, and they just don't want to relive it. But I was able to find different cases, and knowing that my son was all about autism, I didn't really want to go into the autism cases. But they're unique. And you were talking earlier about you have to have an injury that lasts for more than 6 months. Okay. Now, that's one of the qualifications to file. What they call, there's an injury table that was first originally constructed by Congress back when it was passed in 1986, and it says these vaccines, through the IOM and all the other medical literature, here's what we know of the known reactions and injuries. It has to, you know, this type of an injury has to occur within 3 days or within 7 days of date of vaccination. So basically, prior to all these autism cases coming in, if you had a vaccine, you almost had what they call an immediate reaction within just a few days. And then you have 3 years to file a petition for injury, or in the case of death, you only have 2 years to file. Autism cases came about starting, 1999 is when we started seeing them outside of the program, but in 2000 and 2001, 2002 is when they started coming into the program. That raised a different criteria, a different problem. That was what we call the onset of injury. It was not necessarily within 3 days or 4 days or 7 days. It might take 3 years, 4 years, 5 years for the onset of injury. And this is where the problems occur when these special masters are looking at medical records, and they're looking at a family that I talked about in the statute of limitations chapter, where they're looking at the medical records, but for some reason, a doctor, without telling the parents anything, without their knowledge, wrote in the margin, you know, suspect speech delay, question mark. Okay? Parents didn't see that. They never did have any recollection of it, nor did they get a copy of it. Well, when their case comes up in front of the special master, those medical records pop up. That question mark basically threw them out of the court because now it was, they filed too late. The parents didn't know that the doctor did that. And that's the problem you have with some of these statute of limitation cases, especially with autism, is that it's when do you determine onset of symptoms? And it becomes really problematic in the court. And I've highlighted that problem that needs to be corrected. If we're going to go forth, statute of limitations needs to be adjusted. In a lot of states, children have until maybe the age of 18 to file outside of, you know, for, you know, other types of statute of limitation issues. But inside this program, you only got 3 years. So I think there's a big agreement. Even the Paul Offits of the world all agree that we need to do something with statute of limitations. It's just how far do you want to go? And I think what we need to do is bring it in line with the other federal court systems. And kind of goes to what you were talking about earlier, and that is when does the person know and falls in line from there? When does the common man know that what there was an injury? That would be a sufficient change for us.
You know, it's what you're bringing up is so interesting because it brings me back to a lecture I heard about 10 years ago. It was a doctor at Loyola who was looking at the connection between my mind's blank, it's too late at night, you know, between the polio vaccine and the monkey virus, the SV40 virus, which they thought it was contaminating the polio vaccine, and they thought at that time, this goes back 50 years ago, and even when I was in medical school 40 years ago, that there was no crossover of viruses from animals to humans. And sure enough, it turns out that there were multiple viruses that can cross over. And SV40 was the first one they found that can cause cancer in children. It would settle in their brain. And it's also been implicated in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. But the interesting thing about this is the professor said sometimes it takes 30 years to find out the effects of a vaccine, you know. And so to talk about statute of limitations of 1 year, 2 years is preposterous, you know. And I've been looking up tributyline, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the one of the side effects listed for tributyline straight by the drug manufacturer is brain damage in the unborn child. You know, it's like it's written there clear as day, you know. Yeah, this is a really interesting type of, and there's clearly, as you said, Wayne, that the drug manufacturers have put together what they felt was the reasonable amount of time, but doctors seem at liberty to just supersede what the recommendations are.
That's correct. And there's a lot of reforms. I personally believe there's no way to get rid of this program. There's just too much political capital against us to remove the program. I'd love to see it happen. But, you know, someone said, well, what's the number one thing that you like to see happen? I said Congress doing something to override Brusewitz. Because when Brusewitz, Supreme Court case, I still think we can do some things if we can get Brusewitz reversed or removed and allows us to get back into the civil courts.
Wayne, what's the name of your book? I don't want us to run out of time before people know, once again, where to get it, how to get it, and tell us a little bit about it.
The Vaccine Court, The Dark Truth of America's Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. It's available for sale, Barnes & Noble, both in hardback and electronic format. Amazon has it both in hardcover and electronic format, and it's available at Skyhorse Publishing website as well. That is my publisher. And then we'll be moving into some other bookstores and chains throughout the fall, and then I'll be around my website, which is thevaccinecourt.com, which is a basic website right now. I will have places where we'll be doing book presentations and book signings and things like that.
Tell us a little bit what's in the book. I know you've been outlining it a little bit, but it surely seems that this is something that could be of great value to attorneys, although this is not a field that any attorney wants to go into, but surely to become more more familiar with this.
Yeah. Well, a couple of the attorneys have always kidded me and says is that if you find an attorney that wants to exclusively practice in this area, you're going to find one that doesn't know, you know, his left hand from his right hand, and one that's not getting you will not be a wealthy attorney. But
well, you're talking about my partner here.
Well, no, he practices in some good areas, and that's protection of our rights and things like that. That's
right.
Different. But
right.
I spent over 3 years researching and reading about 5,500 case decisions, interviewing 285 families, talking with about 30 attorneys that are practicing in the program, one attorney that represented the DOJ, the Department of Justice, on the other end of it, and had a brief conversations with a couple retired special masters. So I've looked at things, trying to figure out what's going on. The book is basically about the program. What is the history of the program? And then from a family's perspective, and I'm not an attorney, so I tried to write the book in a non-legal manner so people can understand it. What's it like to be someone who files a petition, all the headaches, the roller coaster, emotional roller coaster that they're going to be on, up and down as they file it, then the medical records and everything else. I spent a lot of time in the Gardasil area with a lot of basically parents who have lost daughters in the Gardasil area. That was really a difficult time for me, too, because I was living that, what they were living, for about 6 months, and it was rough what these parents are going through when they lose their daughter or a family member. So we've talked about that. In the book, I highlight several different family stories depending on the points I'm talking about, whether it's reform or whether the court is moving too fast on Gardasil cases. I believe they are. They're trying to get these things moved through the system fast before the science catches up with them. And then at times I go the opposite, where we got families that have been there for 10, 12, 14 years before they finally get the decision, whether it was for them or against them. But
wait, I want to jump in real quick here. We got about 60 seconds, so I want to ask you just to please, you know, say anything else you can quickly. I would love to get you back. I know we've only scratched the surface here, and would love for you to come back on and talk some more about this. And I know you got a second book in the works too, so we'd love to hear what that's about.
Okay.
But go ahead. Any last minute comments
here?
Well,
I've got two books in the works. One is working on what we call the countermeasures injury compensation program. That's where we have smallpox, anthrax, and maybe Ebola later next year if it goes out and a vaccine is created. And that's a very super secret program, and I'm going with that. And then the other book, which I think is more going to be towards your line, is I've entitled it Medical Fascism, where we're seeing the parents having their children taken away by Child Protective Services. Several years ago, I met a gentleman named Jim Navarro down in Houston,
We've got to wrap up. I hate to cut you off here, but please come back again soon,
please,
Wayne, and
so
take this in, because we've got tons more to delve into here, and I'd love to talk to you about that issue in particular, about when children get taken away, because I have some strong feelings about that,
right,
legally and otherwise. But Wayne Rody, author of a new book available and all the places he just told us. I'm sorry, folks, I'm trying to wrap up very quickly here. But you've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. We're here every Monday evening on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. We'll see you next week, folks.
Let freedom ring through.
throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land.